All right, good morning, everyone, on this cold and soon to be colder February day. This is the monthly meeting of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. It's Friday, February 3rd, 2023. I'm Brendan Sharkey, the chair of ACIR, and I'm joined by many of our members, but also John Filczek, who is our vice chair. Welcome. Hope everybody's staying warm. John, I don't know if you wanted to had anything to add before we got started.
Just welcome everyone, and hope you're in a warm place. Have your sweater.
Yeah, absolutely. So this, of course, is a Zoom meeting, so you know the protocols for that. Staying muted until recognized and using your raise hand functions for acknowledgement. So the item that we need a vote on today is the minutes of our January meeting, which Bruce sent out earlier. Do I have a motion for that?
So moved.
Moved by John Filczek and seconded.
Second.
Okay, by Troy, I think, right? Was that by Troy or Keith? I don't know who.
I did it.
Keith, thank you. Okay. So are there any conversations or discussions or changes to the minutes as presented by Bruce? If not, I'll try your minds. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed or abstentions? Seeing none, that voting item is passed. Thank you all. Let's see. So membership updates. Do we, Bruce, have membership updates at this point?
I do not have any. Just as a reminder, the current vacancy is an appointee by the governor of a representative of a small town nominated by Cost, I believe, and Cost has nominated someone. So we're waiting on that. And I believe you were going to talk with the Senate majority leader or pro temp, or I forget which it is, regarding the designee of that office, the position that's been held by former Senator Cassano. And that's something Senator Cassano remains a member at this point and may want to continue. I don't know, but that's right. Something to look into.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. And there was an item that I needed to do, right? In terms of getting in touch with Senator Looney's office about that.
Yes.
Am I remembering that correctly? Even though I didn't remember to do it. Thanks. Could I just ask you to ping me about that? So I don't forget again.
I will.
Thank you. Yeah. John, I'm sorry.
It may be Senator Duff. I'm not, I think it may be the majority leader, but I'll defer to my friends at OPM.
Okay.
And we will look
either
up.
Way. I'm sorry, Bruce, what?
We will look it up so that the right person can be contacted.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Well, let's jump into the LGF initiative and our, you know, what has been the focus of a lot of our attention for the last several months. This is the property tax restructuring report. The status of this at this point is that I reported this last Tuesday at our subcommittee meeting, but just at the executive level, I contacted the governor directly about this, our report and what our recommendations are. A bit of background on that. I think initially over the fall, we were encouraged by Commissioner Boughton to partner, you know, to work on this, and he agreed to kind of work with us to partner on this in putting this report together with the expectation that we'd bring it to the governor for his consideration, or any governor, frankly, for their consideration, whoever happened to be elected. And it appeared as though that, for lack of a better term, that effort was not successful on the commissioner's side, in that he made an overture to the governor's office, had a conversation with the governor's now chief of staff, and there was a interest in our recommendations, but generally speaking, a rejection of, out of hand, frankly, of anything that might cost money. It was apparent that you know, the price tags that we were putting on a number of these reforms, including a bigger commitment to special ed excess costs and special ed in general, as well as beefing up our grant contributions to municipalities to encourage more equity among towns, was I think it's fair to say the term might be a non-starter, was the term that was used for me anyway, from Commissioner Boughton. And at our last full committee meeting, commission meeting, I had contacted the governor directly to request some time to discuss this. And it that meeting kind of got, there were some other issues that kind of popped up with scheduling and stuff. And finally, I just texted the governor again to try to move this along over about 2 weeks ago. And to his credit, he called me, you know, right away, actually, when he saw the text, and said, "What's up? What do you have on your mind about this?" And I explained where we're coming from and what we're doing. I had a, you know, short window and had my best elevator speech prepared, although I wasn't prepared to get the call so quickly. You know, he was appropriately skeptical, I guess, in terms of price tag and financial commitment, notwithstanding the fact that we have a big budget surplus right now. But you know, as he said, you know, today's surplus can be tomorrow's deficit if we're not careful. So explain to me, you know, to kind of get this off the ground, explain to me, you know, why, frankly, why it is that Connecticut is in the position it is with regard to property taxes, and how we compare to other states with regard to not only property taxes, but also in particular special ed. Why are we an outlier as opposed to other states? And can you put that together with some backup and some documentation that I could digest, and we can digest here in my office? Credit to the governor for having somewhat of an open mind on that. And John Filczek put together a draft of what we might want to offer up to the governor. And we discussed that at last Tuesday's meeting. I think there was an agreement that perhaps rather than it being I'm communicating this now because we have not been in touch for the last week or so, but, and I know you couldn't make the last Tuesday's meeting, but, you know, I think what the governor was looking for in particular was actual studies and reports and footnotes on what it is that we've looked at and why we've reached the conclusions that we have. And also in terms of on these topics, but also how we compare to other states. to give a more than just our opinion about things, but rather give a kind of a detailed explanation with references to those reports that could be looked at. Again, one page, you know, summary of this, but nothing more than that as a précis for him. But I think that's kind of the direction that the subcommittee felt made a lot of sense. And to be honest with you, I have not had, I know a couple folks on the subcommittee level were willing to kind of help out with that. And I must admit, I've been so flat out with other work stuff on my side that I have not been as diligent in terms of getting that to the next level. So my apologies to the group on that. But that's where we stand with the governor. But the other question I think that, and pursuit that I think also makes sense for us is to request that we have an informational hearing with the Planning and Development Committee, perhaps the Finance Committee and others, to present our report to the legislature in a which I think has bipartisan interest anyway, as part of their deliberations towards a budget that they will be putting together over the next 2 or 3 months, and see if, you know, if this stuff resonates to the point that they may be willing to take this on. So I'm reporting that I've made those contacts with the majority leader on the House side, as well as to the chairs of the relevant committees, or at least the Planning and Development Committee. We haven't been able to connect yet on that as far as the next step is concerned, but I think that is probably the next logical step in terms of promoting this report to the legislature and bringing attention to it. I know that I've gotten a couple of other inquiries from media who have kind of caught on to the fact that this is out there. So obviously that's another option here, but I and then also talking to our friends and neighbors and to our, you know, sister organizations and constituent organizations, I think is also going to be very important over the next few weeks. So to kind of, again, gain some momentum and some interest in looking at this. So that's my status report as to where we are with the tax restructuring. And John, I don't know if you have other comments or thoughts that you might want to offer to the group, or if anyone else has any other thoughts on that.
I guess, I missed Tuesday's meeting.
Don't apologize. you had a good reason.
I had an IV in my arm at the time, so
yeah, exactly. I was
kind of preoccupied. And I guess the paper I prepared is not quite in line with what the governor was looking for, from what I gather. There is a point where, you know, the property tax reform, you know, if we just did the footnotes from what we studied, it would take up a page if we're looking at doing this.
Yeah.
So that becomes a little bit problematic as far as that goes. I guess I'm curious, are we looking at something that's more of a bullet? Here's the five reasons why we need property tax reform and the backup for it?
Well, I think for the governor's sake, and again, keeping in mind that initiative through the administration is probably, you know, perhaps taking a bit of a back burner right now, given the fact that, you know, obviously this is not going to get included in the governor's budget proposal next week. But I think it's important to continue to engage the governor on what we're talking about. And what, from my takeaway from our conversation, was that he would like to better get his head around what is going on with our property taxes. Why is it that our property taxes are so high? Why is it that we are an outlier in terms of property taxes compared to other states, and not so much with the idea of it being an opinion of the group, or even a consensus opinion of the group, but actually is backed up by data, which we're not going to summarize in a, you know, in one page, but, you know, that we can at least provide the reference points that demonstrate our position on this. It's not just an opinion that was derived from, you know, interested parties or members of this commission. So
I think if I could just finish up, and I know Jim's got his hand up. I think a presentation to minutes, probably as far as informational hearings, it would probably be the Finance Committee at this stage, since P&D is already fully engaged in public hearings on bills. But and I don't think Finance has even raised a bill yet. But providing that sort of 30,000 foot overview to them, and then there are, especially from the school finance project, I mean, they've done actual runs on property tax reform, what the actual costs are, which I think if you hold all the towns harmless and you do the reform there that they suggest, which I think we've discussed here, is like $528 million, which is a lot of money, but not a lot of money. So,
right.
I mean, we can get into those particulars with the Finance Committee. I'm not sure if you can do that in one page. I get it.
No, I think it's going to take a little bit of crafting.
The other thing is, it's just that once you get out of New England and you have 10 states with counties, and, you know, there are big cities in Texas which have some of the worst property tax rates in the nation. But Texas as a whole is not blended, is not a bad property tax state. That's just, there's an example.
Right.
You know, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm not feeling quite as, I'm not feeling as though the urgency, I'm not feeling the urgency as much towards briefing the governor and that in that kind of one page concept as I am about getting in front of a legislative committee as an informational item. That I think has to be our primary focus at this point, because, you know, at least we're on the governor's radar. At least he at least knows that this is out there and that we've done this work. I don't know to what degree he'll embrace it, particularly if the legislature is not embracing it. So that's another reason why I think maybe the focus should be, while it would be great, and I know that we were trying to move quickly to respond to the governor at the time and his request for more information, and you did that, the work that you did to kind of help move that. I think that at this, it's a little bit of a shifting of gears on my part, but it seems like maybe at this point the bigger and more imminent need is to get in front of the legislature. But Jim, and then Matt.
Thank you, Brendan. I just wanted to drop back and remind you of what you had said at the subcommittee meeting regarding the governor's questions. But the first one was, I believe you phrased it as, why do we have a disproportional reliance on the property tax? And that seems to me, now that we have time to sort of delve into some of his questions more thoroughly, that seems to be one that should be farmed out to some academic person who knows Connecticut history and can take us back into colonial time and march us up through how we got to where we were in the right after World War II, because that's pretty much the time frame I think that historically would give us a background as to why we have a disproportional reliance. And then the other things that you mentioned, the special ed outlier, there must be time to figure that answer out. And the third thing you mentioned was to do more of a look at the regulatory fixes that could be put in place. I think that was something that the governor had asked you about too, according to what you'd said. So those were the three things that I think were important, but the most intriguing one, I think, is the first one, is why we have this disproportional reliance and how that all came into being. I think that would be very interesting. And I'm sure there must be some academic folks out there who know the answer to that without having to really research it. So I think we should explore that if we could somehow or another.
Yeah, I agree, which of course then puts it on a slower track, which is fine.
Yeah, that's good.
But also I think, the historical is important that context is important. But also I think he just even wants a comparative analysis of, how other states handle property taxes, particularly New England. I mean, I think the historic relevance of, the historic aspect of it is relevant because in New England, we did it differently than other states did. And that has led to where we are. But even within that smaller universe of New England or colonial era states, how are they handling property taxes in their states versus the way Connecticut does? I mean, Massachusetts has counties, has more counties or more of a county structure than we do, but not really. I mean, it's analogous to what we have here. So why is it that, maybe Massachusetts property tax burden is not as high as it is here? Is that because of Proposition 2.5 in Massachusetts that happened 20 years ago, or has that, who knows? I mean, I'm not sure that we have answers to that, but in any case, I think you're right. Getting some academic support on this would be helpful to kind of make the case and present it. So,
One other point as I've been thinking about this, when Commissioner Boughton brought this to the governor's office, they looked at it and I'm sure they went right to the numbers and said, "Oops, nope, that's a non-starter. We don't like the numbers." I think that in the long run, we've sort of answered half of the question in my mind. We've looked at what our recommendation would be for how we'd like this to look in terms of the property tax being reduced and education being more fully funded, but we haven't looked at the other side of it, which is where does the money come from? And that's surely what they were looking at, and that's what the governor would look at, and in the long run, really, that's what the legislators are going to look at too. Where's the money, folks? This is all very nice. If you can get them to the point where they'll say, well, okay, we think you're on the right track, this is a good proposal. But the next question out of their mouths is going to be, well, this is great, but where are we going to get this money from? And so I think there could be some effort put into, again, it's a sort of a statistical thing that perhaps Commissioner Boughton could help with, or there must be people who would be able to say, well, if you need $528 million, how could that be divided up amongst, let's say, the an income tax on, the more wealthy folks in the state. How much of an increase in the sales tax would we have to do to raise, let's say, $2 million 200 million.
Right.
You know, is this a huge number, or is this just a, you know, a really small number that really wouldn't cripple anybody? And if we had those answers, I think that would provide some more ammunition for solving the initial reluctance of,
whoa,
you're talking about a whole lot of money. Where are we going to get that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that. I agree. I think I will refrain from editorializing, as I think I may have off the record with some of you about perhaps the lack of context that may be prevalent in our executive offices, you know, versus those of us who've been fighting these battles for decades, and so a sticker shock, sure, you know, and I'm sure it did look, as you mentioned, Jim, you know, there was sticker shock there. For the record, and the only other point I'd make is I did, for the record, communicate to the governor a point that John has made and 10,000 friends has made about uncollected revenue that, you know, perhaps if we had a little better, a little more robust collection process at DRS, we might be able to achieve some additional funding. Not that that's going to solve all of our problems, but in any case, that was presented. Governor wasn't disinterested in that. So anyway, for what that's worth. So yeah, Matt.
Thanks, Brendan. So, you know, much of this is disheartening to hear, given all of our efforts over the past year. I want to commend you for your perseverance. You know, in my mind, I see limited value in a presentation to committee, but, you know, certainly wouldn't oppose that. What I would suggest as a more viable strategy, and maybe you've already done this, is to request a one-on-one with leadership. You know, maybe the speaker, maybe the majority leader, maybe the Senate president, and just having a frank conversation with them to see, you know, if really there's any momentum or interest in moving this forward.
Yes, to answer your question, yes, I have talked to both the House and House Majority Leader and the House Speaker about it. Jason Rojas has a particular, he and I've had a particular commonality of interest on these topics throughout his tenure. And so that's why he was the one that I reached out to initially. You know, as is always the case this time of year, it's hard. We've been texting back and forth to each other, trying to figure out a good time for exactly what you describe, which is a one-on-one.
Okay.
To take that temperature and get leadership's backing for that type of informational meeting that I'm describing. So, yeah, I think that's a good, we're on the same page as far as that goes. I think you're right.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, Lon.
Hi, everybody. Happy New Year. I haven't seen all of you since we hit the new year. I was just, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about with this is that, you know, maybe an analysis or discussion of which entity benefits from the taxation. You know, what are we taxing at the municipal level, or what are we funding at the municipal level, primarily from property taxes, that actually benefits the state? And maybe that's the direction to take on it. The other side of that coin is that I think everyone at the local level really likes the idea of property tax reform or shifting the tax burden until the loss of control comes into play. And one thing I see over and over again in many communities when in regards to school consolidation or school cost savings is that everyone's on board until the control is lost. So, you know, is there a methodology or a practice perhaps where you could have the best of both worlds, where you do shift the burden, but there is still a significant municipal control? And I think those are the areas where, you know, from the local town side, people aren't eager to jump into this because it does mean giving up some control of facilities or schools or just general power. And then beyond that, you know, are there areas where we wouldn't mind, you know, shifting some control, especially if what we're doing benefits the state more than the town?
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. John, I'm just doing it in order. John? John Felchek, I mean.
just a couple of things that popped to my mind. And one thing that I've been looking at in depth recently is University of Chicago has now done a nationwide breakout by county on property tax, and even gone further into that where they've looked at the value of homes in each county. So it's interesting when you look at Connecticut, you see that we have an assessment evaluation issue that for the most part, the when you look at the 10 brackets that they look at, 5 to 6 of those are being undertaxed, and those are all in the higher value homes, and that's consistent for every county. And it's the lower valued properties that are paying a disproportionate share of property taxes. So it's not so much we have that dynamic, which I think is more important than whether someone is paying more or less than somebody in Nebraska. Because and then we have the other dynamic in the state of, you know, if I'm in Eastford and I'm paying $2,000 in property taxes, but over in Easton, it's $12,000. Say, well, you got lower property taxes. Well, yeah, you're paying less, but you're not getting the same services. So we're seldom comparing apples to apples when we have these discussions. There are equity issues that I think are more important, which I think that University of Chicago piece points out that perhaps one of the things we should be discussing with the administration and the legislature is, and I don't have the solution to this at this point, but is a revamp of how we do assessment and revaluation of property to build in a more equitable system. And because clearly we, you know, from urban, suburban to rural, there are some issues, some big issues. And that's consistent whether you're in Fairfield County or in Windham County. And finally, I'll just say, I'll disagree with my friend Matt. I see high value in having a presentation to the finance because the meetings with leadership are important, but they're always private and they may or may not pursue something. And while they can get bills raised, I think if we have finance committee decide, hey, we need to look at the property tax, raise a bill, hold a public hearing, that allows leadership to sit back and watch, okay, is this something good or not so good? And maybe we can build a momentum and get something in whole or in part done. So that's my comments at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree with you wholeheartedly that, that when I talked about, when we're talking about the meeting with, and connecting with Jason Rojas, for example, yeah, it's for that purpose, right? To take the temperature of leadership, who then can, direct is a strong term, but encourage the relevant committees to, hold that type of informational hearing on, with the blessing of the leaders, and then see what evolves from there, right? So their role at the leadership level is to kind of gauge, how much of this stuff can have some traction, and they can help direct that traction as that conversation goes on. So thanks for the content. I think that's helpful. John Elsesser. I think you're still on mute, John. There you go.
All right. This is not a tax increase. We ought to stop talking about it. It's a tax shift. And a tax shift is very important to discuss in light that we no longer, most of us, can't deduct property taxes from our income tax. It's a big game changer. And that means that the net impact of property taxes has gone up for many, many Connecticut citizens. So we are now, through our inaction, increasing taxation on our citizens. Secondly, we don't need any more studies. They're all done. And this is nobody wants to read what's already out there. Stuff hasn't changed that much. It's there. Nobody wants to read even a 4-page report from us. So, you know, there's just an unwillingness to recognize facts because they're inconvenient. But the response to, can you give me a study, would be, well, how come the state doesn't have any agency that could do this anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. That's the root, the truth. They don't want the truth. Secondly, the revenue information that you already mentioned, Voices for Children said that's $1 billion. Our stuff didn't add up to $1 billion. It's the same issue that's being debated now at the Capitol. No, let's cut the IRS agents. And what happened? The budget went up. The numbers show going up. So, and finally, as we look at tax reform, there's a major change maybe coming. It's in law on car taxation, which gets to equity issues. And my personal belief is that will raise house taxes. And I know there's been some studies. I just don't believe them. Because they were done by assessors, not economists. Assessors had to have their own interest in doing that. But car taxes are inequitable based on your zip code. And the people with the most expensive cars live in zip codes with the lowest mill rates. So right. It is inequitable. And that, so getting equity there is helpful. I just think that house taxes are going to go up for many, many towns. And I haven't seen, I know people have done numbers. I don't think they're valid. So change is coming. And house taxes may go up. We lost a deductibility already for income taxes. This is not just something that we bring up every 2 years and chat about. It's now turning to a crisis. And, good luck. I mean, it's like the frog in the hot water thing. It's like, it's getting a little warmer.
Well, yeah, thanks for the metaphor on that. And thank you also for avoiding the inevitable reference to A Few Good Men in that the folks can't handle the truth. I thought that's where you're going with that, but... but I didn't want to interrupt you because you're on a roll. thanks for that. I agree. And I think to the extent that we can be out in front of it, we may be a voice in the wilderness right now, speaking to this, but being consistent about it and not being Pollyanna about it, being realistic about what this will take and what it portends, I think is and being consistent with that messaging is going to be what in the end wins the day, whether it's this year or, at some point as the water starts to boil. Thanks for that. Ron.
Basically, John said what I was going to say, and that is that we've had quite a few studies. I think we all can, would have a stack this long in front of us. And the studies too have shown how you could pay for things. And I agree with John too, that it's about the kind of messaging we do, not talking about it as a tax increase or challenging people when they call it a tax increase and talk about the equity and investments issue and what kind of state we want to be. The second issue is about I do understand that that when leadership has not come on board and is not enthusiastic about a particular project, you know, it makes the prospects pretty dim. However, I do think there's value in the committee hearings because we need to take it beyond just talking to a few people and hearing their yes or no. And two, there's been a few years between, it's been a few years since there's been like a really meaty conversation with legislators about property tax reform. And in these few years, you've had, you know, probably maybe, you know, 20% new people who haven't been a part of the discussion about it. And we need to and have to reach out to those types of people to orient them to what's going on. So those were my thoughts.
Agreed. Yeah. So you'll be with me, with us as part of the the entourage that will go and talk to our leadership, right, Ron? Is that have you volunteered for that?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I won't throw everything on your shoulders. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks. Yeah, Rick.
I'll do this quick. What Ron said, first and foremost, but just to put this in a context, a few years ago when CCM put out the This Is Different report, you know, we were able, the research then showed that state and local government as a percentage of private sector employment was the 41st smallest among all the states. This was a few years ago. And then also that excluding K through 12 education, local general government expenditures in Connecticut ranked 50th out of all the states as a percentage of the Treasury's measure of total taxable resources. Local education ranked 25th. This is part of maybe what the governor needs to hear. It's not something we're imagining. It's very real. And despite the fact that we're pretty frugal compared to most other states, on the education side and the municipal government side, our property tax is among the highest in the country. Here's in addition to what Ron said, I hope we could frame this in a way, and I heard you say this a minute ago, Brendan, this is a multi-year effort. We always knew this is going to take a few years to get meaningful property tax restructuring or relief. What does seem to be front and center this session is speeding up the ECS funding increase and trying to address special education, which are both fundamental parts of our recommendations. Could we, along, I think CCM's part of a press conference this morning, maybe right now as we speak, could we throw our weight behind that too and try to get meaningful relief there in this session and make it clear too to our partners or potential partners, including the government, that this is step one and that meaningful reform requires coming back and looking right at some of the other things we've talked about. I'd hate to lose momentum or be on the defensive right now. And so that's my suggestion on how we try to achieve something during this session and continue to build up momentum for some of the other things. We could also, by the way, talk about shared services this session because it's not as expensive, I think, through the COGS and the rest. I'll stop.
Right. You know, that's kind of leading, thanks for that, Rick. I think that's also leading to the next bullet point on our agenda, which you've alluded to, which is that there's a public hearing going on, I think today, on House Bill 5003 about education funding. And I'm assuming you meant that there was a press conference going on ahead of that public hearing in the Education Committee. I think you're right. There's clearly a discussion happening already, independent of us, about equity in education funding. And it seems as though we're dovetailing nicely with the conversation that's already happening. And you're right that I also think you're right in pointing out that, you know, if there is that momentum already happening, then we kind of become get it to a point where we are actually endorsing those reforms because that's consistent with what we're saying at ACIR. And so let's do that. You know, let's establish ourselves as a collaborator on a lot of these fronts.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that, Rick. I know we have this as a separate bullet point, but did anyone else wanted to mention the efforts that are going on with 5003? Was there a I know we wanted to put it on the agenda just as a marker to kind of alert folks, our members, to this conversation that's happening. But I don't know if anyone else had any other thoughts on that. John?
I think we need to be, as a group, aware of this bill and the components of it and how it fits into what we're trying to do. And if there's a role within going forward for ACIR to show support for parts or all, and it moves forward what we're trying to do on the property tax reform, then we shouldn't shy away from adding our voice to it.
Right. Agreed. Okay. Good. Any other thoughts on that? So I think what we, you know, what I'm hearing is that we need to step up the advocacy at the legislative level in particular right now, as well as with the governor. I don't know part of my problem has been, and I have to offer my mea culpa just because I've been consumed with work on my personal side. So my bandwidth has shrunk significantly over the course of the last month or so. So I appreciate, John, your efforts to help respond to the governor. And maybe we can identify a way to kind of follow up with the governor on that front as well. But I think in particular right now, if there are conversations that maybe the way to do this is, again, from a kind of a top-down thing, which I will take on, talking to senior leadership and getting a commitment to do an informational session, if nothing else. But if I could ask you all within your own circles, if you can be talking up our report and speaking to the fact that we intend to have an initiative here on that we're presenting, that would be helpful. I think it, the more we're talking about it, the better. John, let me,
everything we've talked about approaching the governor and leadership, I agree with, but I think the critical person maybe right now is Senator Fonfara to get to get this hearing and a placeholder for what we're talking about, if he agrees. If I was still lobbying, and I'm not, but he would be the person I would approach.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're muted.
Thanks. Jim, I want to recognize you, but before I do, I have a domestic delivery that's coming in that I was not supposed to be here for another hour, so I thought I had time. So, John, if I could I hand over the chairmanship of the meeting to, and I know the next item in particular was something you also wanted to talk about in some detail. So if you can excuse me for just a little bit, I'll hand it over to John, and then I'll be back in a couple minutes.
All right, Jim, you wanted to add something, please do.
Yeah, John, and this probably could be well directed to you. Actually, I have a question. Do you think it would be beneficial, useful at this point, if we sent our recommendation to each of the COGS and I suppose the RECs and ask them to have a discussion of this at their meetings, just to be aware of the effort going forward? How do we go about approaching?
You know, I don't know if this has been, it's a good question, if it's been distributed beyond our group. Have we done that, Bruce? I don't think we did, but we just
confirmed. No, that has not been done. The only distribution to date has been where members were asked to share it with others. But I can certainly send it as broadly as the group would like it distributed.
I mean, it'd probably be great if it was sent out to the assembly, but the other, unfortunate thing right now is we're on February 3rd and we're coming very tight onto the deadline to raise bills, and which I think is the 6th. And there's ways around that, but so the chair of finance is sort of a critical person at the moment. Matt?
Thanks, John. Well, you all have convinced me that a presentation to the legislature at the committee level would be beneficial and helpful. I'd be very happy to participate in that. And, you know, I do think, while at the same time continuing conversations with leadership to see where they stand. And I think your suggestion is a good one in order to get something scheduled. Thank you.
You know, I can reach out to the senator, and I forget who the House chair is. I know John, but I think that's going to be a critical piece of this. Will they give us time to present the report and answer questions and start a dialogue and hopefully raise a bill so that we can have a discussion. You never know with finance. It is kind of, I won't say any more. it can get a little fickle. And, you know, the last time when back, and I remember the date, February 20th in 2020, just before the pandemic, presenting our last report to a joint meeting of them. And the reaction I got was, you know, you didn't go far enough. You weren't aggressive enough.
Right.
And of course, you know, who knows? We'll never know what would have been raised from that report because of the pandemic. But hopefully we have an opportunity now to do something. I did put up the link to this University of Chicago study where you can go in and look at data from the different counties across the country, including Connecticut. And it's really, and Francis has brought this up on occasion, I believe in previous meetings, is, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, Connecticut has got X property tax burden, but it, you know, we got 169 towns, and it does jump around quite a bit. This is the closest thing I've seen to breaking the state down, at least by its historic counties. And it's interesting data with each one of those. So I would encourage folks to take a look at that. And it did point out to me that perhaps we, you know, one thing we need to add to this, and I mentioned it before, is the way we assess property in the state may well need to be examined and reformed.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks, John. I'm back. And agreed on getting finance. It's Maria Horn is the new House Chair, who's incredibly capable. If you've ever checked her resume, wow, she's we're lucky to have her, I think, in the role that she's playing right now. So pretty impressive person. So, John, why don't you take the next point, bullet point under item four of our agenda about a new LGF subcommittee topic regarding COGS and RESCs.
We have talked in the report that I mentioned that ACIR did back in 2020 about the RESCs and the COGS being the building blocks for regionalism and shared services in Connecticut. And the unfortunate reality, or one of the things that's happened and I can attest to this for in my 28 years, the directors of the COGS and the directors of the RESCs have only had one meeting. So it seems that if we're going to actually use those two groups as that foundation or the building block box for shared and regional services, we need to get them talking and understanding each other, not just for the ones that happen to be sharing part or all of the same geography, but just to see if there's collaborations that can be undertaken and, you know, what's the most efficient way to deliver these services. So that was sort of the reason I was looking to get that on there to say, okay, let's engage the six COGS or the nine COGS and the six RESCs and see what ideas we can pull out of that and look to the RPIP, look to the legislature for perhaps support to do some grander things that will help our towns and the state.
Yeah, thanks for that. I don't know how, I guess one question I would ask, because I do a lot of work with both entities, particularly now on the RESC side, to what degree does the RESC Alliance and its equivalent on the COG side, to what degree are those associations actually engaging on this kind of in these kinds of discussions, and what role can we play?
I don't think they've engaged at all. And the only time we had the meeting was when OPM's former Undersecretary Scott Jackson pulled us together on a Friday. And he was Revenue Services Commissioner on Monday. So that was the end of that. So things happen fast. But
there's not within those associations. I know there's a lobbying presence on behalf of all the RESCs.
Right.
And I think is there something analogous on the COG side?
No, they have big money, and we don't have anywhere close to that to retain a lobbyist.
That's true. Yes.
In behalf of the nine COGs. I mean, I know when we back with the Moore Commission when we did a study on special education, and I got a chance to look at what the budgets were for the RESCs and the size of their staffing. it really is a night and day situation between, I mean, I think mine out here has 70 some odd employee, or not 70 some odd, 70 some odd million dollar budget. And I believe they're one of the smaller ones. So that by itself would dwarf any COG.
Yeah, right.
300 and some odd, you know, employees.
Well, I guess my question to the group then is, you know, is this something that we would like as a, you know, to take on it through the subcommittee as kind of an initiative that we would want to pursue, not losing track of, you know, what we're also doing on the property tax restructuring, doing it as a both and approach. Go ahead.
I just see us as a facilitator of bringing that together, and that's another avenue to, whether it's addressing these education issues or just bridging what is sometimes just an irrational gap or fissure between education and general government.
And if I could just add one other point, I think, John, you're also hitting on, you know, here we have as, you know, one of the key of our five or six recommendations in our property tax restructuring is that, you know, it is using the COGS and RESCs more effectively to take this on. Even the governor, when I spoke to him about this, was all about it, you know, and even the staff that kiboshed the rest of our report for being too expensive indicated, yeah, we're good on the regional entity front in terms of trying to, make those more effective. It seems consistent with our overall mission, and it seems consistent with even our own recommendations to even do more, John, than perhaps. And John Elsesser's making a good comment in the chat about this as well. But I think, even going beyond just a facilitator, I think perhaps ACIR should be a little bit more aggressive with all of you guys. Love you all, you know, from your different perspectives, but, you know, perhaps really driving, I'm not exactly sure how, but driving that discussion about ramping up services and maybe, you know, being a little bit more, pressed for this a little bit. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm a contract attorney, kind of an in-house counsel for ACES. And, I know that they are looking at a lot of the things, and I've told them about a lot of the things that we're doing, and they're very interested in it. And they have more resources to do a lot of this stuff than, say, the COGS might. But I don't think it's for lack of interest or will. I just think that perhaps they just don't, may not, not all, all of the entities have a real clear view of the pathway, of the runway through which this could actually happen. And we can, I think ACIR can play a role in facilitating that. Lon.
Yeah, I was just going to add that I think if we're going to talk about the RESCs, I think representatives of some boards of education would be helpful. I think the relationship between the RESCs and the boards is different than maybe a COG and a municipal government is.
Yeah.
Because to a large degree, we often use them as a service provider as opposed to working in conjunction with. And I think there's things that make sense in a RESC, and I think there's things that make sense for school districts to collaborate on. And yep. My perennial issue is I think we have too many barriers to local district cooperation on the education side.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Right. Right. Any other thoughts on this? Because I'm, if folks are in agreement, I think we can start this later this month when the subcommittee meets. So are folks feeling like that's a worthwhile pursuit for the subcommittee? I'm not seeing anyone say no. I'm seeing a thumbs up from Matt. Why don't we put that on our agenda for the subcommittee meeting? I don't think we need a formal vote for it, but if folks are comfortable with that, let's let's add that to our agenda for the subcommittee for later this month. All right, Jim?
Just a question. I think it's a good idea, but I'm concerned. For example, our COG out in this neck of the woods is very much directed. What the COG does is directed by the chief elected officials at their meetings.
Yeah.
I don't know if some of the, John, for example, has a little more independence, or if some of the COGs have, if the staff leadership, you might say, has a little more in the way of guidance that they project. But out here, I would say the leadership would be the elected officials. And so I guess I would wonder if we should be, if John or somebody should be talking with the leadership at the RECs, and maybe in a meeting, to discern if there are conflicts that would develop. In the same with the COG leadership, is this something that the chief elected officials would look forward to doing, to be perhaps more involved with the RECs in their neighborhoods, to learn more about it, or is there some animosity? I just don't know, but my worry would be that there might be some animosity that is there.
Well, I think that would be the task of the subcommittee to find out. I mean, I think you're raising a good point. And I don't think anybody here today has any ideas as to exactly the best method of accomplishing the goal that John articulated. But that really would be up to the subcommittee to kind of flesh out a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. And because I think it would be really helpful if you could get those two groups working in coordination. On many issues. I think that would be terrific.
Well, and that was John Elsesser's point, I think, too, in the chat, that there's not a lot of collaboration necessarily between COGS and RESCs. If I'm understanding your point, Jim, that there's not a lot of collaboration even among and between the COG and the RESC services and other things that could be done. So
I think so. I don't know that for sure, but that would be my sense.
Sure.
There's another possibility, I suppose, too. And you've mentioned that John mentioned the staffing and the budgets that these RECs have. They may be, especially as it relates to the sorts of information that we're looking to produce to back up our effort with the taxation, they may be a source that could right away know the answer to some of these questions or they could develop the answers to some of these questions that we have by assigning a staff to do that.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
They may also be, and one of the things I want to explore with us is we have towns that are now stressed in terms of being able to secure qualified people, whether it be on the HR front or finances, et cetera. There may be capacity, I believe there is capacity within the RESCs to perhaps be integrated into that side of things to assist towns. And you don't see that collaboration there are great examples of it that take place. I believe where Matt used to be town manager in Mansfield is one of the shining examples of it, where a town and its school district are working hand in glove and on a myriad of fronts. So I think one of the things that and may well appeal to the governor is we need to sort of follow that model that Mansfield and a few other towns, far too few, are doing, where we're bridging that gap between education and general government. And if the bringing the rest together and the cogs together can help facilitate that and perhaps open up some other avenues, and even within state delivery of services, it doesn't hurt to at least examine.
Sure. Agreed. Okay, good. I think we've got an item to add to our agenda at the subcommittee next month, and we'll have a further discussion about all this and how best to go about it. So just mindful of the clock, other old business. We do have an update on the Title VII Task Force and our representation there. Bruce, do you want to do the honors of delivering that news?
Yes, let me unmute here. Sam Gold has been appointed. Sam is on the call last I checked.
He is.
And so you can exchange marching orders as to what is expected. I don't know if any meetings have been scheduled. I know nothing about that. Sam, have you heard anything further?
I don't know if Sam's actively participating. Maybe Martin may be away. But Martin, before you go, I do want to just congratulate Sam in absentia anyway for having the apparent credentials and trust of the appointing the appointing authority, if you will. I gather he passes muster with the Senate Minority Leader which I, as I recall, is the appointing authority for the ACIR members. So congratulations on that. Martin, you're sure, muted.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. And yeah, I just wanted to also follow up that. So from what my understanding is that they're trying to make sure all, because of new, chairs and such, that they're making sure they've got the committee all in place. The only vacancies that are present yet is that there's two appointments for members of the GAE committee that have to be done. And then Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff has an appointment to make for a representative of a regional council of governments. So those are the three positions that have yet to be filled. My understanding is, with talking with Representative Carvo DeGraw and Senator Rahman, who are the chairpersons of this, is that most likely it won't get really started until after session. I don't know, that's all I've kind of heard preliminary, whether or not they're going to be able to do anything during session on this, but that's the only updates I have on it.
Okay. You're on that latter piece, you're talking about the Title VII.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. All right. Thanks, Martin. Appreciate that. So item six is just the other considerations and other new business. We have on here the fact that CAPS has asked to make a presentation to us next month about the status of their blueprint, which we've endorsed. So we're more than happy to have them come and present to us. John, did you have a thought?
I just have another piece of new business that I put in the chat, which is the Office of Legislative Research put out a report, many of you may have seen, on how towns can merge, which I found be kind of interesting and has come up in my region, where three of the towns have been on and off exploring dissolving and becoming one town. And kind of a just a, interesting that OLR put that out there.
Do you think it makes sense perhaps for us to review that within ACIR? You know, because that's also consistent with our property tax thing. Is there a way for us to take a look at that? And
I think it is totally consistent with what we've been talking about. And, you know, it was something that was for a while with the Moore Commission was discussed at length.
Yep.
I remember some crazy slides where I merged a couple of towns and it wasn't really received very warmly, but it was humorous.
Maybe that can also be a topic either at the subcommittee level or, you know, for the full group. Perhaps a discussion about that. I don't know if that, what makes most sense on that. Maybe we can, John and I can kind of figure that out in the interim. Yeah, Martin.
You're muted.
Thank you. I lowered the hand and forgot to unmute. Sorry. I had just one other piece of new business. I wanted to do an introduction of a new OPM staff member, which is on with us today. And a lot of you may know her. Former State Representative Christine Goupil is now a policy development coordinator here at the Office of Policy and management, heading up the assessment data collection grants management unit. But I did also want to include that part of her duties, some of the items that were in ACIR's Public Act 19-117 task force report. One of her duties will be developing and implementing government efficiency and shared services programs. And the other is to also to assist Bruce in providing some additional staff assistance to ACIR as part of her duties on that as well. So I did want to just welcome her aboard, introduce you to ACIR. So in her new role here.
Can we, Christine, welcome. We're glad to have you. And I think we all need to collectively do a bowing and homage to you for helping out OPM and helping us out as well. So the floor is yours. Welcome.
I am excited about it. It's something I've been very interested in a long time through the different roles I played over the past sort of decade. So I'm looking forward to working with everybody as well. There's a lot to be done.
Great. Martin has my contact information. So we, you know, happy to talk with you offline. I'm sure John is as well as our vice chair to kind of catch you up to speed on what we've been doing when that you find that relevant and helpful.
Absolutely.
Great. We never served together. I know you by reputation more than personally. So congratulations on the appointment.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, great. Great. Okay, so that was good. A lot of new business. That was great. Are there any other comments or from the group or from anyone from the public who's joined us? Okay, seeing none. Our upcoming meetings. It'll be February 21st, Bruce, for the LGF subcommittee.
That is correct. It's a week earlier than normal to avoid having that meeting be just 2 days before the ACIR meeting that follows to give a little more time to process it.
And for the record, you know, the subcommittees are not, we don't need to publicly notice our subcommittee meeting. So, we can move those around as needed. We have a lot more flexibility with that. So, thanks for catching that and scheduling it appropriately. And then our next full committee meeting is a commission meeting is Friday, March 3rd. With that, on this chilly day, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by John, and seconded by the other John, and Sam as well. So all those in favor, aye. Have a great weekend, everyone. And by the way, I just need to say, I don't know if you can see my, but fly eagles fly in the interim. my wife is a massive, massive Eagles fan. You know, we're going to be looking forward to next weekend. But in any case, stay warm this weekend, everyone. And we'll be in touch as things develop over the next couple of weeks. All right.
Stay warm.
Take care.